Good morning. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. Coming up, some First Nations leaders are having their own election debate over whether they should vote in it at all. We'll hear that. But first, an alleged war criminal takes the stand in defense of his Canadian citizenship. This morning in Vancouver, a man is expected to make his first appearance in federal court to answer allegations that he committed war crimes in Bosnia in 1992. Immigration officials say that when Branko Rogan came to Canada as a refugee, he hid his past as a guard at a prison camp where Muslim prisoners were abused. The purpose of the court proceedings is to revoke Mr. Rogan's citizenship. This is Canada's first attempt to revoke a citizenship case involving allegations of a modern war crime, in other words, an alleged war crime perpetrated after World War II. CBC reporter Jason Proctor has been covering the court case, and he joins me now from Vancouver. Good morning, Jason.
Hello, Anna Maria.
So who is Branko Rogan?
Well, that's very much the question at the heart of this trial. Now, some things are incontrovertible. He applied to come here as a refugee from Serbia in 1994. He did work as a guard at a prison camp in Bileca, Bosnia-Herzegovina. But how long and what he did there is at issue. So he says it was just for 15 days, and he spent his time walking around the exterior of buildings, did nothing wrong. His accusers claim, though, that he took part in beatings of one elderly prisoner in particular. And so the judge, Anne McTavish, has been hearing evidence from witnesses brought in from around the world in this case.
Now, the government is then claiming he's complicit in crimes against humanity. Is this actually a war crimes trial?
No, it's a civil proceeding, and what they want the judge to do is to declare that Branko Rogan obtained Canadian citizenship by false representation. If they get that, then they can move to revoke his citizenship. So what they're ultimately saying is that when he applied, he hid facts that would have made him ineligible as a refugee and inadmissible to Canada. Namely, so if they'd known he was a guard in that place and at that time, anybody interviewing him would have had grounds to believe he committed a war crime. So they're asking the judge to determine if what happened at the camp was a war crime and if Branko Rogan was complicit in it.
Now, this happened 19 years ago. How did this come to light?
Well, a chance encounter at a mall here in the Lower Mainland. Huso Hadzic was an inmate at the camp. He also came here as a refugee. According to his testimony, his wife was out shopping at a mall called Middlegate Mall in Burnaby here when she peers into a liquor store. And who does she see? So she comes home, tells Huso. He decides he's got to do something and manages to finagle Branko Rogan's address out of BC Hydro. He then stakes the place out, confirms it's the very same guy that he grew up with in the small town of Bileca, and that he says he saw guarding prisoners at this detention facility, and so he phones RCMP.
Wow, what a story.
Yeah, I mean, it's a chance encounter and something people have said, you know, could really only happen in a place like Canada.
Well, so you say witnesses have come in from around the world. Who have they heard from?
Well, it's quite fascinating, really. The Crown is set to recreate Bileca, this little town of about 12,000 people in the courtroom, pre- and post-conflict. So they've set up maps. Witnesses have stood at drawing boards, drawing floor plans of the detention facilities where they were held. This all takes place in the years and months leading up to the war, the outbreak of war in Bosnia in 1992, following the collapse of the former Yugoslavia. Now, Bosnia-Herzegovina sought to declare independence. That led to ethnic tensions. Serb police and military in the town of Bileca rounded up Muslim men and put them in a pair of detention facilities in that town in what we've come to call ethnic cleansing. You'd be very familiar with this conflict.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
Two of the witnesses came here from Sweden, where they ended up as refugees. What they described was kind of this slow poisoning of what had been an idyllic small town where neighbors, you know, suddenly turned on neighbors, where Muslims were afraid to go out. These witnesses said they were arrested for no crime they could discern other than being Muslim. It definitely left their mark on them. At one point in the proceedings, one of the witnesses, Sabir Bayramovich, insisted on standing up and showing the judge a tattoo on his ankle, and I asked him to show it to me later.
So this is the window in the prison where I was staying.
To je gore Bileća.
So this, what's written here, it's Bileća, the name
ovdje
of the town.
Datum.
This is the day of my arrest, which is June 10th, 1992. And this is the place, the window, from where we used to get some water and
to je
food.
Kao moja želja da jedan dan iziđe makar kroz ove.
And these were the rails. This was my wish, that one day even to be able to be released, to get through those rails.
So what are they alleging that Branko Rogan did?
Well, all the witnesses say they saw Rogan guarding prisoners. Two of them allege he picked on one elderly man in particular. His name was Asim Katovich. He and his son were in a very crowded jail in back of the police station. Now, one of the Swedish witnesses, Ramiz Pervan, said he saw Rogan lead the elderly man away from the jail, across a yard and into a prisoner's cell. He said they heard screams for the next hour, and then Rogan came back to the jail, called the old man's young son to a window and said, "Did you hear how I killed your father?" And the son was crying. The old man wasn't dead, but he was black and blue. And this witness, Ramiz Pervan, said that happened up to 10 more times. Now, the problem from the prosecution's point of view, much of the testimony here is secondhand. Nobody saw Rogan actually beat the old man.
And will that elderly man testify?
No, he's not coming. The RCMP inspector in charge of the case testified that he was brought to Toronto, where he was examined by physicians and psychiatrists. The prosecution pointed out, you know, this is how things worked in this cramped, crowded prison where hundreds of men were kept in appalling conditions. So abuse might not have taken place in front of other people, but they did swap notes on what happened and who did what.
Mm.
Ramiz Pervan, the witness who said he saw Rogan leading this old man were beating. He also spoke at length about an assault he endured at the hands of the police chief and a pair of guards. He said he was kicked about 20 times in the head until he was bleeding from his mouth, ears, and nose. You know, as pointed out, he's still on antidepressants. He addressed the judge as well directly, saying, you know, "Madam Justice, I was only 42 and I became an invalid then." Now that was at the end of his testimony. He had to leave several times to compose himself. He's sort of this tall, elderly man with a very soft voice, clearly affected. He says he's had invitations to testify at The Hague. This is the first time he's spoken about what happened to him in Bileć. And I asked him how it went.
Ja sam pričao,
I spoke the truth and nothing but the truth. Unfortunately, this this truth is very painful for me.
Jer ja sam je osjetio na svojoj koži.
Because I felt this on my skin.
I to je vrlo teško.
And believe me, this day today and the day yesterday in court for me was heavier, was more difficult than I had done a month of heavy labor. And probably it will be very difficult for me to decide in future to attend in these court proceedings.
Jer to strašno djeluje na moju psihu.
Because this is terribly affecting my psychological side.
Now, Jason, Branko Rogan hasn't actually been in the courtroom for any of this.
No, he's defending himself. He's chosen not to attend the Crown's case. So what you have in this courtroom is this empty desk on one half of the aisle where, you know, the defense would normally sit. Sabir Bayramovich, remember the guy with the tattoo, was hoping Rogan would actually be in court, and I asked him why.
Najviše bi volio.
The most that I would like to
da je on bio tu, was, da mu kažem, pred sudijom,
was
pred
him
tužiocem,
to be present, so I could tell him in front,
znači,
of the judge,
ti si moj komšija,
to tell him that you are my neighbor,
radili smo zajedno,
we used to work together,
živjeli smo zajedno,
we used to live together,
radovali se zajedno,
we went to the same events,
napravio si mi to i to,
and you,
napravio si mi to i to,
and you
napravio
did this and this to me, you did this and this to
danas me. I danas si došao u Kanadu, misliš da te pravda neće stići.
And today you came to Canada thinking that the justice will never get you.
Interesting, huh? All these mm-hmm. years later. Mm-hmm. So what is Mr. Rogan expected to say when and if he testifies today?
Well, we know somewhat from a video that was played of a police interview with him in 1998. He admitted to being a reserve police officer, but said, it was only for 15 days and he had no choice as there was a widespread military call-up at the time. He said he was in a hallway guarding Muslims. He certainly didn't abuse any of them. His shift was 8 hours every other day. And once he saw the opportunity to escape to Serbia, he fled. He had a wife and three young children. He said he didn't know anything about any abuses, was never ordered to do ethnic cleansing, nor would he have if he'd been asked. When he applied as a refugee, he was worried he wouldn't be accepted if he said he'd been a police officer. He told RCMP then he thought his accusers were out to get him, that this was part of some dirty game to get rid of him because he's Serbian. I called him. At first, he didn't call me back, but then a week into the trial, I reached Branko Rogan. He's not in court, but, he has a computer. He's very aware of what's being said about him. And I asked him why he didn't say he was a reserve police officer.
I was reserve police officer, but when I coming to Canada in embassy in Belgrade, I worry if I say something voluntarily or something like that, that thing can prolong my coming to Canada. And why was so desperate how to live in Serbia in that time. It's not about me. I don't worry for that. It's about my family. My daughter, she's 11 years old, coming from school and crying. Is that war crime or what is that? I think that is worst war crime than worst crime I did it. That's an incredible story. Impossible. I can't believe it. What's happened from 10 days? I don't sleep, me and my family. Why? For what? For nothing. That's a shame. I'm sorry.
So that's his view of it. He says he purposely chose not to say something then, too.
Mm-hmm. Because he was worried, that it would prolong his coming here, and he was desperate to get out of Serbia, as you can hear there.
And he was in Belgrade at the time.
Yes,
this would have been
was.
In the early 90s.
Yeah.
Okay. So will he testify?
Well, he said yes. He said he hasn't been able to take time off work until now because he has to feed his family. I asked him what he says. He said he'll tell the judge exactly the same thing he told us there. His future in the country certainly will depend on it.
Interesting. And Jason Proctor, you'll be covering this some more. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Jason Proctor is a CBC reporter in Vancouver. You are listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1 and Sirius Satellite Radio 137. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Well, it will take some time before the federal court rules on whether Branko Rogan's citizenship can be revoked. In the meantime, the case raises significant questions about how Canada can or should deal with those accused of war crimes. By some estimates, there are 1,500 alleged war criminals living in Canada. It is within Canadian jurisdiction to try people for war crimes committed in other countries, but each case is complicated, potentially also very expensive to deal with, and funding for such trials can be limited. Bruce Broomhall is a law professor at the University of Quebec in Montreal, and he specializes in international justice issues. He's currently on sabbatical at the Liu Institute for Global Issues at the University of British Columbia, and he joins us in our Vancouver studio this morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, how common is it for Canada to pursue the option of revoking someone's citizenship?
Well, as Mr. Proctor said, this appears to be the first case in which that's actually been done with a modern war criminal, but it had been tried a couple of times previously with World War II folks. The key to understanding how Canada works on these things is to start at the front end where the person actually applies to get into Canada, and then go from there up to the most difficult and if you like expensive option, which is actually putting them on criminal trial here, and revoking their citizenship. Of course, is something that happens a couple of steps down the track after they've gotten into Canada, after they've applied for and received citizenship. The real aim of Canada's war crimes program is to weed people out well before that stage, and that's where most of the action is. Most mm-hmm. of the action is at the point of the visa officer interviewing applicants or interviewing people who've applied for refugee status and trying to filter them out at that end.
Oh, this case is different, huh? Because it sort of was triggered by the fact that somebody spotted him. Mm-hmm. In a mall, and then everything started to unravel from that.
Indeed. That's also what happened with the Rwandan, Desiree Munyaneza, who was convicted for participating in the Rwandan genocide in a Montreal court 2 years ago. He was spotted by someone that knew him from the city of Butare in Rwanda. So, as Mr. Proctor said, you know, Canada's a welcoming country. A lot of people come here every year, and it's not surprising in a way that people who were formerly on opposite sides of a conflict find themselves face-to-face in a mall or a subway platform or something else here.
So remind us what happened with Mr. Munyaneza.
Yeah, well, Munyaneza was spotted by a member of his community, the city of Butare, and reported to the RCMP, and in due course it was discovered that he had also gotten into Canada on false pretenses. The RCMP did a number of interviews in a number of countries, put together a case, and that became the first trial of, if you like, a modern war criminal, a genocidaire, here in Canada. He was the son of a well-to-do merchant in his city, part of the Hutu elite of Butare, if you like, and he was proven to have participated in the roadblocks and other procedures that filtered out Tutsis and their so-called Hutu supporters for killing. So he was, after a trial in Montreal, he was convicted of 7 charges of participating in massacres and participating in rape and sexual violence during the genocide, and was sentenced to life in prison. He'll serve out his sentence here in Canada, and then I expect he'll be ordered deported to Rwanda at the end of his sentence.
You know, recently there's also been the case of Jorge Sosa, arrested earlier this year on an extradition warrant issued by the U.S. He's accused of involvement in a massacre in the Guatemalan Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
I have that figure there, 1,500 alleged war criminals living in Canada. Obviously, if you make the point, they try to find people before they get here. But I mean, who would these people be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as we gather from the story of Mr. Rogan, it's not hard to make your way past the first set of filters. I think the immigration officers are pretty savvy people. I think the people in the Belgrade embassy in Mr. Rogan's day knew the conflict pretty thoroughly. But if someone approaches them with a, you know, deliberate will to deceive them, it does happen. So the number of 1,500 doesn't surprise me, given the immigration figures we have in Canada.
And the number of conflicts going on in the
and
world.
And the number of conflicts that were going on, especially at this period post-Cold War. So, you know, the challenge for us, in a way, is to figure out what to do with them once they're here. I was reminded, listening to Mr. Proctor's story, of a Salt Spring Island man who there was an attempt to revoke his refugee status a couple of years ago, and it failed, and he remained in the country on similar allegations. And it struck me that the case was a good example of where Canada should prosecute. That in people say, well, you know, why should we prosecute these cases here? Didn't this happen in Rwanda? Didn't it happen far away? Isn't it their business rather than ours? And, of course, the answer to that is, well, there's a couple answers to it. One is, of course, that these are such atrocious crimes that, in a sense, they're everybody's business. But, on the other hand, it's simply not possible to send them back sometimes. Sometimes the country doesn't have the capacity, it's not willing to do justice, or it would do it in a way that wasn't conscionable to us. But it's also just sometimes simply not possible for a range of reasons. And in those cases, a country really has to look at the choice it's facing, which is one between impunity, letting the person go and build a life for themselves here in Canada, or justice, and that means, as we heard from Mr. Proctor's report, you know, these are, it means affirming the dignity of the victims. It's saying, yes, your stories matter, what happened to you matters, and even if this took place 10 years ago and halfway around the world, we think it's unconscionable that this person goes free.
Well, you know, in the case of the former Yugoslavia, there are various war crimes tribunal. There's the war crimes tribunal set up at The Hague. That's winding down, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed, and that's part of the problem.
So, if you find someone and you can prove that you've got enough to perhaps send them to trial, what happens if they're winding down?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, that's what universal jurisdiction for. That's where national courts step in and shoulder their part of the burden. And here, in the background here, it might be the issue of cost. People say, well, isn't this expensive? And to that, I would just say, you know, consider the cost of a biker trial, a money laundering trial, a large fraud, a sex tourism trial, a human trafficking trial. Anything that crosses borders, anything that involves mass crime or organized crime. Is resource intensive. It takes RCMP a lot of time and effort to mount a case.
Do justice officials and intelligence officials actually make decisions saying, oh, that's just too expensive to pursue?
Well, that's a good question. You'd have to ask them whether they decide that. What's clear is...
That's the suggestion, right? Sometimes it's too expensive, but...
Indeed. Well, there was an internal review done of the war crimes program a couple of years ago, and it mentioned the issue of resources on the prosecution side. Your listeners, Anna Maria, might want to know that Canada's war crimes program is built out of four agencies. It's the RCMP and the Justice Department who handle the prosecutions, if you like, but there's also the Immigration Department and Border Services who handle more the visa, the refugee, the citizenship side. And most of the budget and most of the action is on the visa and refugee side. And there's really only a small portion of the budget that goes to investigations and prosecutions. The budget was fixed in 1998 at some, I think it's $15.6 million. It hasn't been increased since. And people like myself and others have said for a long time now, that's a shrinking budget, right? Obviously, in the face of inflation, if you don't increase a budget, and de facto, it's shrinking. And the budget needs more, and it needs more on the investigation and prosecution side if Canada's really going to be doing its job. Sometimes the slogan of the war crimes program is that Canada will not be a safe haven. But it's very important to recognize that not being a safe haven isn't enough. Sometimes you have to also be willing to be a forum in which impunity will be denied and justice will be done. Mm. And that's the side in which I would argue we need more of an investment so that there are very competent people in the Justice Ministry and the RCMP who work on these files, but all of the indications we have say that they're not getting their slice of the pie and that the pie isn't big enough.
So if we look back at the case of Branko Rogan, if citizenship is revoked, what happens to him? Does he get deported? Where does he go?
Yeah, well, that's the question. Presumably he goes back to the former Yugoslavia, to Bosnia Herzegovina. Now the question there, of course, is in immigration matters, you always have your pre-removal risk assessment. Is it safe to send the person back there? And it may well be that. In some cases, it happens that the person ends up staying in Canada for quite some time before it's deemed safe to return them to the country. I'm not sure. You'd have to ask a regional expert whether that's the case for Bosnia-Herzegovina. I understand that the United States has extradited a couple of people back, so it may be that issues of safety won't present themselves in the Bosnian case. I know that in the Rwandan case, for example, there's been a number of countries that have refused to send people back to Rwanda.
Interesting. Really, a real labyrinth there. Bruce Broomhall, thank you for taking us through some of that.
My pleasure.
That is Bruce Broomhall. He's a law professor at the University of Quebec in Montreal. He's on sabbatical right now at the Liu Institute for Global Issues at the University of BC, and he spoke to us from Vancouver. If you have thoughts on what he's saying and on this issue, call us, write to us. Go to our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent. Click on the Contact Us link. Call us toll-free, 1-877-287-7366. You can also find us on Twitter at The Current CBC or Facebook, CBC Radio, The Current. Stay with us in our next half hour. To vote or not to vote, that's the ballot question for many Aboriginal people in Canada. We'll talk about that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current.